This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio by
Majida Hashim,
Jeff Sandu.
We will be with you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon. As you've just heard on the news, cryptocurrency is going through a bit of a bumpy ride today. You'll be hearing a lot of stories about crypto a little bit later on the show. We've got some stuff about ICOs and we've got, all kinds of stuff coming up. But we're going to be starting off with a story in just a couple of minutes about how Apple's privacy feature cost ad companies millions of dollars.
Yes.
I don't know whether I should smile, laugh, or praise that. We'll then be talking about how millions of Iranians are evading the internet censors. Then story number three, ICOs and some of the dealings there and therefore. Number four, VTech. They agreed to pay $650,000 fine over collecting children's data. Just to let you know, they are one of the biggest manufacturers of young children's educational
toys. Yeah.
And then we'll be wrapping up with how someone is already stealing solar panels from China's new solar road.
Flying it off the road, literally.
I do not know why we're surprised about this.
I don't know, too.
Anyway, if you want to get in touch with the show, do get us on Twitter. We are at BFM Radio. And, of course, on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. Jeff, kick us off.
Yeah, so internet advertising firms are losing hundreds of millions of dollars following the introduction of a new privacy feature from Apple that prevents users from being tracked around the web. It's called the ITP, or the Intelligent Tracking Prevention. It's a feature that's built in Safari, which holds about 15% of the global browser market. So what it does is, ITP was announced in June 27, and it was released for the iPhones, iPads, and Macs in September. Now, this feature would prevent Apple users from being tracked around the internet through careful management of cookies, which is a small piece of code that allows an advertising technology company to continually identify users as you browse around, you know, the entire web.
Otherwise known as stalking.
Yeah, stalking in numbers, right? Because you can't really identify who the individual is. You just have a number that you can follow this number around and see what he does around the web, right?
Yeah.
So you can tell this person is surfing, you know, on the site.
On Lazada.
On Lazada, and then he's buying this item, and then he's finding reviews, so he's clearly interested in this item, and that's why you see these ads over and over and over and over again, right? So what happens is that, you know, so cookies is like a love-hate relationship with a lot of people, because we're fine with ads because, you know, sometimes when my shopping behavior is that I actually purchase it because of an ad that attracted me to buy this thing, which I previously would have never heard about this.
They've
right?
got you, Jeff. They've got you.
So, yeah, no, sometimes it works to your favor. But sometimes, or most of the times, it doesn't, right? It becomes annoying. So cookies have this love-hate relationship. You know, we like to eat cookies, but we know it's bad for us, right? So so Apple and a lot of companies have, you know, all this ad-blocking software. So Apple has one built in within Safari. The thing is, though, it is causing advertising firms to lose, you know, hundreds and millions of dollars. According to a general manager of Interactive Advertising Bureau, the Tech Lab, Dennis Buckheim, he's the general manager, and he said that this feature would impact the industry widely. He's saying that, you know, it's likely to cut more than a fifth of their revenue in 2018. They expect a range of companies who are facing similar negative impacts from Apple's Safari tracking changes. Moreover, we anticipated that Apple will retain ITP and probably evolve it over time as they see fit. And yeah, so it's kind of like it's launched. Advertising companies are calling this like a sabotage because you kind of feel like these brands are meant to work with the advertising firm and kind of mix it. But this just kind of like, hey, what happened here? You were supposed to work with us and, you know, help us to deliver ads better. Now it's like, hang on a minute. You mean I can't?
But isn't this a win for consumers?
Yeah, you would say so as well, right? So consumer side, I think we would be happy because a lot of people are downloading ad blockers, whether it's from the Chrome extension or, you know, whether it's the app itself that you just don't want to see ads. And we get that. I get that as well. But, you know, the world needs to run. The internet still needs some sort of, you know, monetization in order to run certain things, right? Mm. Wikipedia, for example, it's a great site, but every year you know, they request people to, you know, donate. And the reason why it's donation is needed is because they, you know, they don't do ads and stuff. So, you know, if you're willing to, if you're generous and, you know, want to give out this kind of thing, then yeah, we can go full no ads, but there's no free lunch, right?
They're going to find a way anyway. Yeah. These ad companies will find a way. There's this ad blocker, we'll find a different way. It's just complaining right now.
Interesting that you got this article from The Guardian as well. At the end of the article, it says, if everyone who reads our reporting who likes it helps fund it, our future would be more secure. For as little as £1, you can support The Guardian. It only takes a minute. Thank you.
Yeah, so also the thing is, though, unlike Safari's ITP, Chrome's ad blocker, right? So Chrome's ad blocker, they created a partnership with the ad industry. So, you know, the company, the feature only blocks what the company calls intrusive ads, such as auto-playing video and audio, or popovers which block content, or just ads that take up the entire screen. So, you know, annoying ads, basically, is what a lot of these, you know, common ad blockers is supposed to do. What Apple's ad blocker is just a complete ban. Like, you know, it's just nothing. You can't trace the user at all. Apple's pro user in that sense, and we've seen that recently from them. I think maybe this is just like a stance that they're taking for now with the whole battery fiasco a few weeks ago, you know, and they came out and apologized. It seems like Apple is now, you know, really listening to the people, to its thing, but yeah, now they're you know, pissing off the other side of the coin, right?
I'm wondering, what does Apple have to stand, even if stand to gain, even if they allow these ads on? Because I don't think they take a cut from advertisements. It's mostly the sites or whatever platform it is on that is paying for the ads anyway.
Yeah, but I'm also guessing that there are a certain ad companies who in boardroom meetings with Apple will have said, you know, if you allow our ads to come, I don't know this is speculation, I should say that, you know, that they would have paid a fee to allow certain ads to come through. Jeff, can you confirm that or not?
It could be that as well, right? But I think it's just more of the fact that Apple is going against what we would say like an internet standards of, you know, cookies should remain on a computer until it expires naturally or manually removed by a user. It shouldn't be enforced by a corporation or a company itself, right? So if you were to install an ad block, is you as the user is the one making the decision to do the ad blocking thing.
Right.
Whereas for Apple, it's a bit different. Why do you as a company decide to enforce this on the advertising industry? Because it's affecting millions of users, which it may be good for them, yes, but it's a bit too of a harsh decision to do this here. Let the user decide again. You know, Apple should, you know, I get it that they're listening to the users, but don't just listen to you. Trust your users to give them an option that they can pick. Apple don't give options to users. It comes down to that again. I keep saying this over and over again, but if you see all this kind of news, you can't actually go back to the same argument. It's just, it's the confidence level. Let people choose on your Safari what kind of level of ad privacy or cookies you want to allow. You know, I will give out a few maybe to certain ads that I, to certain sites that I like and I support. You know, I will not give any of my cookies to sites that I extremely, you know, dislike. So give an option. I know it's another layer, it's another way of, you know, doing things which Apple don't like. They like it to be simple, but, you know, give me an option.
All right. We have to move on to our next story, though. It's still obviously tech-related. How millions of Iranians are evading the internet censors. Authorities in Tehran have ratcheted up their policing of the internet in the past week and a half, part of an attempt to stamp out the most far-reaching protest in Iran since 2009. But the crackdown is driving millions of Iranians to tech tools that can help them evade censors, according to activists and developers of the tools. Some of the tools were attracting 3 or 4 times more unique users a day than they were before the internet crackdown, potentially weakening government efforts to control access to information online. Here's a quote from Mehdi Yanajad, who's the executive director of Net Freedom Pioneers. He says, by the time they wake up, the government will have lost control of the internet. That's very bold.
Wow.
Officials at Iran's United Nations didn't immediately respond to a request for comment for this piece. But in recent days, Iran, as you may well have known, has said it has contained days of public demonstrations against the regime. Protesters used social media to spread the word about or bear witness to the protests, as did people during the Green Movement back in 2000. 2009. They blocked, this is the Iranian government, they blocked major social media sites, including Twitter and Facebook, back in 2009. But now a lot of people are taking using Telegram.
Yeah.
We've heard about this. It's a messaging app that is widely used in Iran and a whole bunch of other countries. Jeff, do you want to quickly, briefly explain how Telegram works? Because it's not like your normal messaging platform, is
it? Yeah. So it's Telegram's got like a whole... I can't go into the detail side of things. My mind is just kind of shutting down. In the sense that Telegram is very much like WhatsApp, but it's very highly encrypted, and the way it delivers the message across to the other using a very different type of protocols, and it's an excellent instant messaging platform that doesn't really, you know, attach you to like a certain SIM card per se. It's very much a cloud based.
Right.
There's very different types of protocol, really crazy ideas. We'll talk about Telegram a little bit more later on the show. Yep. But yeah, love Telegram, good stuff.
They're also moving to an app called Siphon. That's Siphon. It's a Toronto based firm that makes a very similar app. They have said that the number of unique users a day in Iran jumped from about 3 million to more than 10 million on January 1st and 2nd. And it remains now at about 8 million. So when governments do this stuff for people like Siphon and for people like Telegram, it's their best marketing tool.
Yeah, well, you know? It goes down again. You can't shut the internet. You can't ban the internet. You just can't. People will find ways, like Majida mentioned,
they will find a way
to get this.
Right.
You can see even China is the best example in the sense that, you know, there's so many memes going about, you know, the Great Firewall of China and stuff, right? But I visited China before, and it's actually fairly easy to still access Facebook, and, you know, it's not very difficult.
Right.
It's fairly easy for someone who's, you know, not super tech savvy. I'm not like a programmer and stuff. I'm just, you know, it's just download an app.
You know,
and
your stuff.
Yeah, just download, register within an hour or so. You're connected to the outside world. So, you know, we will always find a way to get around the internet. So you can't do is, I think governments just need to look at a different way in terms of managing. Just listen to the people, I guess.
That's tough, though. It's a wonderful idea.
It's tough.
But I mean, it's stuff like this. I mean, we've seen close to home, you know, people try to shut down messaging platforms or more. And like you say, even if you don't use the internet, there are apps out there that if you are in a group of people, messages will be circulated just by using Bluetooth. You don't even need the internet anymore, you know.
Yeah.
So this is the point where people want to say something, they will say it regardless, one way or another.
Yeah, mirror sites are not something new. We have we've had that so many years ago. I remember about almost 10 years ago, I was in Myanmar during the junta regime, and everything is blocked there. You can't access Google. You can't access... there was no Facebook then. But there are places that you can go, and these are like those hole-in-the-wall kinds of cyber cafes, and they have all these mirror sites. It's Google spelled with four O's, for example. And you can still access your Gmail.
And the other thing is that if they ask telcos to completely ban, and all the telcos will agree and work together in, you know, not giving you data to access the sites, right? If, let's say, you remove the internet itself, there's still other ways to access this. Things like mesh network, where it doesn't even require a telco to access this kind of information. It just requires people around you. So you're utilizing your friend's phone and your phone and your phone. So imagine you have a chain of people who will then end up outside of where you're living. You can then access this kind of news. So, like, you know, there's so many ways. The reason why mesh network is not famous or popular is because it's just very difficult. A lot of money needs to be invested in this. But if push comes to shove, a lot of people are going to then invest in, you know, mesh networks, and mesh networks is going to be like the new internet thing. So,
All right, we've got to wrap up and move on to some music. We have some Beatles coming up with I Feel Fine. When we come back, we're going to be talking about how Singapore's copy cash was denied at the token offering in Malaysia, followed by Kodak are launching a cryptocurrency for photographers, and how Telegram will be launching an ICO estimated at around $1.2 billion. That's all coming up after these messages here on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Build financial mountains. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Jeff Sandhu
and Majida Hashim.
While most of people who invested in cryptocurrencies are now crying as the market plummets because of the closure of some of the South Korean exchanges, which is clearly affecting prices, we're now going to be talking to you about ICOs, initial coin offerings, and you know, whether or not there's quite a few coming out right now.
Yes.
Telegram, as we know, is coming up with a 1.2 billion one. Yes. Singapore's copycash. There's some stories behind that. And of course, Kodak. Jeff, where do you want to start?
Yeah, okay, so let's start with Telegram one, because I think it links nicely from your previous story, right? So Telegram, they're planning for an ICO, and it's dubbed as the most ambitious token sale yet, because they're looking at $1.2 billion US dollars. And it's not like the first time a messaging platform is doing an ICO in the cryptocurrency thing. But the thing that's different about this is that Telegram's dream is like an Elon Musk level kind of ambition, you would say, right? So what they plan to do is, I found one of like their white papers, and it's fairly interesting. It's not the official one, but it's, I think this is, you know, what they plan to do is basically they're going to come up with this thing called the TON platform, or the TON platform, which is a Telegram open network. What they plan to do with all the money that you would, you know, get on an ICO level is to build a TON platform, which will include a TON storage, and the storage is basically like your distributed file storage systems where you can store all kinds of information. Like, it's a competitor to Amazon S3, for example, right?
Right.
The AWS S3.
Right, right, right.
And then you've got the TON proxy. This enables people to hide their identity and their IP profiles and their nodes so that you can, you know, surf the web freely and, you know, and be effectively be immune to censorship. And then there's the TON services. So you basically will provide a platform for third-party services of any kind that enables smartphone-like friendly interfaces for decentralized apps and smart contracts. And then there's the DNS, and there's TON payments. So payments like a wallet system. So Telegram is going big here in this dream that they have.
Wait,
right?
So this sounds very much, though, to like the things that they're offering is very similar to what WeChat is already doing.
What WeChat is already doing in that sense, right? So they're releasing tokens that you can then use as a form of cryptocurrency within the app itself. So, you know, you can pay for services provided by the apps built on the TON platform, or you can pay for storing data in the TON storage, or you could pay for hiding your identity using the TON proxy. So there's a lot of usage for this, and a lot of people are excited about it, and it's fairly so. And I actually didn't know much about Telegram. I'm a big user of Telegram, but I just realized one of the founders just completely blew my mind. Let me just read to you, like, you know, is Dr. Nikolai Durov. He's the co-founder, and he's also the CTO and the architect lead. Now, he's a renowned mathematician and also a world-class programmer, and he's uniquely combined into one person. At the age of 8, Nikolai already solved a cubic equation. He started coding at the age of 9, and at the age of 13, he built a fully-fledged operating system for the Intel 80386 microprocessor in an x86 assembly language. And at 11 years old, he has already filed 100 pages of x86 assembly codes, which is basically, you know, the standards of today in that sense. At the age of 11!
Did he just grow up where there was nothing to do? You know, genius fellow.
So yeah, genius fellow.
What was he eating?
So Telegram's definitely, you know, setting themselves up for a very interesting future, despite what's happening with the crypto world today. And also in Malaysia, bringing back to local stuff, Singapore's ICO, Singapore wanted, they have this company called Copycash. They wanted to do an ICO as well, and they plan to actually come to Malaysia, do a bit of roadshows, and, you know, get exposure and some marketing and stuff. And unfortunately for them, though, on January the 9th, it's reported that the Securities Commission of Malaysia told Copycash that you have to cease and desist all form of business activities in the country, including the token offering. It is likely that SC's directive will be upheld by the MAS of Singapore, as the two agencies, they signed a cooperative agreement to provide regulatory support for each other in September 2017. So Copycash still has not responded since then. Not sure yet what's going to happen and how they're going to, you know, fund this project that they have. So that's happening with Copycash.
First things first, if you call your ICO and your token Copycash, it's going to raise red flags
it's
everywhere.
Everyone's just going, huh? What?
Yeah, why does it sound so dodgy?
Mm-mm. So, okay. You know, it's...
Speaking of dodgy...
Well, yeah, so Kodak, everyone knows about this because, you know, it's such a big news, and like what, their stock markets rose up to 60-70%, and then it took a slight dip, but if you're a owner of a share in Kodak, you must be really happy right now because everyone's talking about it finally again after so long, right? So Kodak has got into the cryptocurrency game. They have proposed two things from CES 2018. So it's a two-pronged blockchain strategy, which is very weird to say blockchain and Kodak in the same
sentence.
Right? Because
it's like the meeting of two worlds.
It's like digital and Kodak in the 1980s when they discovered it, but it didn't quite work. Anyway, so so the first one that they did is like their own cryptocurrency called Kodak Coin, which is designed to improve image rights for photographers. And that's a great thing, which we'll get to it a bit later. Second one, the Bitcoin mining scheme. It's called Cash Miner, Cash with a K, where customers can rent equipment and allegedly make money over a 2-year period. So the first one, the Kodak Coin, that's not a terrible idea. That's actually pretty good because, you know, it uses blockchain technology to solve a real problem, which is, you know, photographers are not getting paid and their photos are being ripped off in the, you know, everyone's like, you know, ripping off from Google and then posting into their website, so they're not getting paid for their work. So I guess having an idea of a public ledger for image rights will help photographers to get paid for their work.
Great idea.
And also, because Kodak is a well-established brand, it would help people to get familiarized with the idea of blockchain, because that should be the future from the coming months, right? The second one, though, Cash Miner. There's a huge problem with this, and everyone's calling this a massive scam. The reason being is, on the surface, Kodak claims that this Bitcoin miner, is something that you pay for a 2-year contract, and then you can make profit. At the front of their deck that they have is, you know, in math we trust, purchase the Kodak hash power to produce Bitcoin. You pay a 2-year contract, it's $3,400 upfront payment, and they promise you that you would earn about $375 per month, which is about $9,000 over a total of 2 years, which will make back the money that you paid, which is $3,400. So on the surface, it sounds fine, okay, right? So Kodak is asking you $3,000 upfront payment, and then you buy this mining rig, which is Spotlight is the guys who make this mining rig, and it's licensed to the Kodak brand. So they'll upkeep for you, they will do all the maintenance work, and they'll split you the profit. Now the problem is, though, that the current way of estimating the value of these coins and the mining rates, it's where, you know, I think they didn't quite understand what Bitcoin or mining is, right? So one of the basic tenets of Bitcoin mining is that it becomes more difficult over time. Today, right now, as we speak, it's at maybe 98%. Tomorrow, even the next time, it's going to be 9,900. It just goes to get harder and harder. So the rate of Bitcoin production for one of these cash miners will drop significantly over the next 2 years.
And it will use more energy, which in turn will cost you more money.
Exactly, right? So, you know, so it's possible that the value of Bitcoin could go up as well while it becomes harder, so it kind of balances it out. But there's no guarantee that it will, you know, even out at the end of your 2-year cycle. According to one of Bitcoin economists, the final profits could actually just come in at about $2,400, which is way less than the $5,600 investment that they promised, right? It's 9,000 minus the initial investment of $3,400. So they're promising like a $5,600 within the 2 years. It's pretty far from, you know, what the exact thing is going. And if you see today's market, everything is just crashing, right? So you can't really predict. And for them to state that,
I don't know, though. I mean, like you were saying, they were very smart for the past few months. Since November, in fact, their share price has been sat at $3.10. As of right now, their share price is now at $10.70.
Yeah, so if you're an owner,
just inserting that word cryptocurrency or blockchain, as we know, has had massive effects on many, many companies.
Hey, if you're an iced tea company and you add the word blockchain to your company, I bet you your share prices will go up.
Right. Majida, anything to add?
I don't know, because thanks to you guys and listening to you guys every day, so I started a little bit in Bitcoin, right? And I'm still trying to learn how this goes. And as the last few days has gone by, come 2018, everything has been so fast and I'm trying to keep up with it. And all these new currencies are coming up. All these new ICOs are appearing, and I don't know whether or not, should I now sit on this? Should I trade? Should I do this? And you guys are going like, trade. How do I keep up with something like this as somebody who's new and just exploring this world of cryptocurrency?
Right. I mean, I think what's happening, like you just mentioned, is that things are happening so quickly.
Yeah.
And there's so much coming onto the market right now. There's so much information that not many people do know. You know, even people who are familiar with that world are like, what the heck is going off? There is so much information to digest at the minute. So your guess is as good as mine right now, almost.
Listen, there's this thing called FOMO.
Yes.
Fear of missing out. And in the Bitcoin world or the crypto world, everything is just FOMO. When you hear something like this, everyone just bounces. There's a very good example. I think one of the founders of Dogecoin, which is a coin that has nothing to do with any product, and it has risen in value of like, you know, tenfolds or something. And one of the earlier founders just mentioned that this is the problem with the crypto world, that you can have a non-existing product and be valued at billions. Yeah. And I understand that. So, but like, you know, for example, Telegram's ICO makes sense. There's a whole usage for this. There's the whole need for a decentralized system. Even Bitcoin has its own usage, right? So all these ICOs and all these plans and all these companies coming up with everything, there's like a million over ICOs in this world. Maybe only 5 out of those are, you know, real legit stuff. It's just thinking of, you know, who's going to be the next Google or the next Facebook in a decentralized world.
Yeah.
That is what people are, you know, just I want to get into this because, you know, this is the whole thing. And there are obviously people who are just out there to make scams and, you know, make the quick buck, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, don't get FOMO'd into, you know, this Bitcoin crypto world just because it's the talk of the town.
Yeah.
You know, Teo Ice is the talk of the town as well. I don't see everyone ordering Teo Ice. Ha, now you're questioning to yourself, why is Teo Ice talk of the town? FOMO.
Yeah, exactly, because he's talking about it.
Yeah.
So that's it, Majida. You know, if that, and everybody who's listening at home, if that's something you're interested in, you know, do your due diligence, do your research, see if it's a product that you believe in, see if it is actually going to make a difference. Don't buy into it just because people are saying, it's cheap right now, you should buy it. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Right. Time to take a break. Some music from Genesis, Abacab. That's coming up right now. And then when we come back, Majida will be talking to us about VTech, how they agreed to pay a $650,000 fine for collecting children's data. Shame on you. Don't go anywhere. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Build fortunes modestly. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Jasandu
and Majida Hashim.
Majida, tell us how and why VTech have agreed to a $650,000 fine.
Yeah, so this case is the Federal Trade Commission's first prosecution of electronic toy maker involving the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. And it is charged because it didn't obtain parental consent before collecting personal data of children who use these toys. The settlement announced earlier this week requires the Hong Kong maker of educational toys, cordless phones and other products to run data security programs audited by a third party. But as part of the settlement, VTech will not admit that it violated any laws.
They won't admit?
Yeah, it's part of the settlement. Because they did a settlement, they won't admit.
Oh, so basically they behind closed doors, they've gone, we did it, but no, we didn't.
It's a settlement. It's out in the open. Everybody knows about it, right? The FTC have been investigating VTech after the company disclosed in November 2015. This is like year before last year, a data breach whereby a hacker gained access to 5 million customer accounts, 600,000 of which is children accounts, many of which included photos that were linked to physical addresses. And according to Jacqueline Connor, who is a lawyer to FTC, these are children's addresses, how they look like, and possibly even a voice capture of the children themselves. This is the FTC's first prosecution of an electronic toy maker for violating the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, also known as COPPA, a 1998 law revision to the 2012 to require companies to get parental approval before collecting children's data.
Wow.
The interesting part is this, okay? You would have thought that if you have something that dealt with children, there would be even tighter personal security laws. But maybe because it dealt with children, it was taken for granted. You have toys, and this is not the first time. You had Cloud Pets that also said that they had a data breach, although there's not a lot of information on that. You have Barbie dolls, for example, by Mattel, who is connected wirelessly to networks, and they have been recording children's speech patterns in order to interact with kids. The question is, did parents give permission for this toy company to capture this information by kids?
I mean, I think that's the thing. When you're with I'd imagine when you're with your kid and you're going through the toy shop and the kid sees a Barbie that talks back to you and records your voice, they just go, Mum, can I have that? And I imagine most parents would think immediately, okay, I need to read through the instruction manual. I need to sign this privacy agreement. I need to do this, that, and the other. They just expect it to do what it says on the box, right? So I don't know.
This just reminds me of an episode in Silicon Valley, HBO's TV series of, there was one, spoiler alert, if you're watching Silicon Valley right now or you have not watched and you plan to watch it, then just put it on mute for the next 10 seconds. So now Piper Chat is this thing where it was created in their lab, and then when they launched the new service, they had a whole bunch of unique visitors and subscribers, and they were all the age below 13 years old, and they had like a huge problem with COPPA. So this just reminds me of something from a movie, and it's just every time it's either Silicon Valley, IT crowd, funnily enough,
right.
Black Mirror, which, obviously everyone's watching Black Mirror and going like, oh my God, I'm so scared. Yeah, you should be scared of your phone, right? So I'm not surprised at these kind of things because,
I went to look at at VTech Toys. I went to see what toys they are. They are these toys that a lot of small children will use, especially toddlers. They are the ones that had those little screens and you have buttons that
like
press on it.
Like handphones as well.
Yeah, those little handphones. And you can create avatars using, a face capture of yourself. And then you get to name the avatar after your own name. And the question is whether or not it was written on the box or whether or not the parent read through it to say that this data actually goes on and gets stored on the cloud and it becomes wirelessly connected and then stored. A lot of parents would assume that this would just be on that device for that kid to use. Collecting it, although there was in this article, they said that if a hacker were to have, and already had this, what would they use the information for? And a lot of hackers said, nah, it's kids' information, they wouldn't do anything with that. But the possibility that it can get photos, physical addresses, and voice of the kids brings in the question of pedophiles.
Yeah.
And that would have malicious intent.
Yeah, yeah. That is worrying.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Now we're going to
stop doing all this, by the way, all this children tracking thing.
I think it's terrible.
It's a horrible
idea. Adult tracking is one thing, but tracking.
Well, it goes
kids.
Back again to the privacy. They add privacy with Apple, and then Chrome has these things. Yeah, if you're just tracking kids, then
what's the point?
What's the point? I mean, they can't buy
exactly.
So like, even if you're saying, oh, it's just to track to understand kids' behavior, you don't need to know the kids' behavior. Parents need to know what their kids' behaviors are, not an advertising firm.
Right, we're going to take a break. Music coming up from the Stone Temple Pilots in a second with Interstate Love Song. When we come back, final story of the day, how someone is already... I shouldn't be laughing. I'll start again. How someone is already stealing panels from China's new solar roof.
Okay.
You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
Business, finance, and more. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. What do you do when a solar road has been open less than a week and authorities have already found out that somebody is stealing solar panels from that road? What do you do, huh?
what can you do?
What can you do? You have to find this guy.
So China opened a 2.1 mile or about 2 kilometer stretch of solar highway with the intention for the solar panels on the road to be powering the towns surrounding it. And the engineers also had this ambition that these roads would wirelessly power electric cars driving on the road as well.
A wonderful, right? Holistic answer to solving some power issues.
Mm-hmm. So this is located at Jinan South Ring Expressway. It starts off at the eastern Chinese city of Jinan, home to about 7 million people. The solar highway is able to handle weights up to medium-sized trucks, which this is usually an obstacle when it comes to using solar panels where weight is concerned. The road was opened on December 28, and by the 2nd of January, an inspection team noticed that a piece of road was missing. The piece was small. It was measuring only between 6 inches wide and 6 feet long, and it was cleanly cut, suggesting that someone deliberately pried it
This sounds like...
To remove it,
I don't know if you remember those stories back in the early 90s of where certain animals were being found in the middle of nowhere with precisely body parts precisely removed, and everybody went, how does it happen?
Are you comparing body parts with solar panels?
Yeah, because of the way it was precisely removed. You know, 6 inches wide and 6 feet long. I mean, that's pretty precise, that.
Now, although these solar panels aren't exactly expensive enough to justify stealing it, because that's one strip, right? That's a panel. It is possible that the thieves wanted to steal the technology rather than the panels themselves. And with the panel in hand, the thieves could replicate and design and sell cheaper knockoff panels.
This is why I am not surprised.
Right? So to build the photovoltaic highway, the Chinese engineers had to use 3 layers. The uppermost is a transparent concrete so that it feels similar to asphalt. Then came the solar panel layer, which is sandwiched in the middle, and that's the one absorbing sun rays. And the bottom of it is another layer of asphalt that protects it from nature itself. So it's actually pretty interesting to see how the technology had come together to make a solar panel durable enough for heavy vehicles to pass through. Beyond acting as a power source, it also has another benefit. The panels also heat up the concrete, allowing it to automatically melt snow during the winter times of the year.
Great ideas.
So that you can see why someone wants to steal it.
Okay.
The thieves have not yet been caught, but they speculated that this would be the motivations. Regardless, the road has been repaired and it's now operational again. I mean, if it's six inch wide, you know, that's one street, I guess you can still drive over it. We've seen potholes locally, which is much wider. It's been replaced, but the thing is that they've not caught the thieves, and they're saying that, you know, somebody can steal it again. Solar roads around the world. They are in Europe, they're in France, there's in the Netherlands, but this is the one report that someone actually went there and stuck a thing in it to pull it out.
It's just a lot of work,
right?
Like, wow.
Okay.
What do you do when you carry that lump of solar as well, and then you go back home and then you want to fix it to your own?
It's like I said,
so much of hassle here.
Mom, I have brought you a present.
Yeah.
I'm going to put you a little solar panel on the roof,
but it's
just 6 inches wide. Right. It's time for us to wrap up, of course. It's all the time we have for today. We'll quickly run through the stories that we covered today, and then we'll tell you what's coming up on the Breakfast Grill replay. We started off with...
Yeah, so Apple's privacy feature are costing ad companies millions of US dollars because it's no tracking, so no revenue.
We then spoke about how millions of Iranians are evading the internet censors. There's a big online crackdown over in Tehran.
And then we talked about Telegram's 1.2 billion ICO. And then we talked about the Singapore's copy cash and what happened to their plans to open up here in Malaysia. And then we talked about Kodak, their two-pronged blockchain strategy, the Kodak coin, which is good, and the Bitcoin mining scheme Cashminer, not good.
And then we spoke about how VTech has agreed to pay $650,000 as a fine over collecting children's data. And then we went on to speak about how someone is already stealing panels from China's new solar road.
My word. Right, that's it, folks. But don't go anywhere, because coming up after the 1 o'clock news, of course, we have the Breakfast Grill replay. It is with the Malay Contractors Association of Malaysia, the PKMM. They were established to promote the interests and competitive of Bumiputra contractors. The Breakfast Grill discussed the effectiveness of affirmative action policies in the construction industry with its Deputy Secretary General, Dato Jamaluddin Non. That's all the time we have for... just quickly before we go, Majida, thanks for all your help over the last few months.
Cool.
We do hope to see you around and listen to you more on air somewhere. Don't go anywhere, of course. Have fun and good luck. That's it. We've got music coming up. It is Kings of Leon with Red Morning Light. On behalf of Majida Hashim and, of course, Jeff Sandu, I'm Rich Bradbury. This has been Enterprise BizBytes on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.